I'm Christopher Lydon with France's global filmmaker Thomas Balmes, wondering what journalism might learn from anthropology on film, what we all might learn from a sort of YouTube anthropology. This is Open Source from the Watson Institute at Brown University, an American conversation with global attitude, we call it. Anthropology is the social science of spotting, as they say, what's familiar in the strange world and what's strange in the familiar world. Thomas Balmes and his camera have done it all around the world. Listen here, for example, where he's hanging out and filming in a law office in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and the partners are thrashing out their damage claims for a 30-year-old electronics worker who died in a car accident.
He was hit by a car.
He was a pedestrian. Yeah, he was a pedestrian. He got hit by this guy who hit four or five people.
Did Craigs give money? Did he put an economic value on the services rendered by the parents? I think we should do it for purposes of this. For purposes of this settlement,
we should claim it.
We should have that number. What additional money can we get for the cost of the mom taking care of?
I'll bet it's another $500,000.
Yeah, I do. I think
three,
so too.
Two. It's okay. All right. So let's say $500,000, just for argument's sake. Tell me a little bit about this guy's enjoyment of life. In other words, he was a weightlifter, but and he worked. Did he enjoy work? Do we have any information about whether he liked the kind of field he was in? And what about his weightlifting? Was he a competitive weightlifter, if you know any of that stuff?
No, he wasn't a competitive weightlifter.
Just
he
was just
out. He liked to work out. But I think the main focus of his life was his family, his extended family.
Thomas Balmes says the U.S. is heaven for documentarians because we Americans, unlike Japanese, say, or French people, will talk openly on a stranger's camera about anything, including dollars for death. But most of the Balmes movies are, in fact, made elsewhere, looking, for example, at the tribal wars in the Balkans through the eyes of tribal warriors from Kenya who went to Bosnia as peacekeepers, or, say, watching McDonald's market its burgers in India, the land of the sacred cow. The next big Balmes production will track four babies from birth to walking in Namibia, Japan, Mongolia, and San Francisco. Everywhere, Balmes uses the fly-on-the-wall technique of direct cinema. No shooting script, no voiceover commentaries, just looking, listening, and leaving viewers to decide whatever it is we catch, as in that Bridgeport law office again.
So he was earning a living as an electronic.
$32,000 for an electronics whiz, and then he works in addition.
He's not an electronics whiz. He's a high school graduate with a certificate from the Connecticut School of Electronics.
Great.
Demand and take, right?
So where are we? We're
demand and settlement.
Demand and take,
right?
I would say demand at $15 million because they've got half that, and I think it realistically could get that.
No, they actually have more than that. So they may go to like 30, 40. Million, maybe.
Is he likable?
Oh, I didn't get that.
We
were limited to seven.
No.
I'd say 20.
What's the material?
First, I say don't mediate. I don't think we should mediate with Judge Waters, and I think we're in the driver's seat, and I don't know why we would mediate only to have her water it down. But having said that, I would demand $12 million and take $6 million.
Wow. The defendants, you've got a 30-something-year-old electronics.
Let's keep going around.
I had demand 7.4, take 4.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think a jury's going to give you.
Go back to defense
work. I should. I'm embarrassed, but I don't think a jury's going to give you that much money for this kid. I mean, I think you're going to get a lot of money, but you're not going to get $12 million.
Okay.
Yeah. He's got less than $1 million earning capacity. I mean, even the medicals are not that stunning.
What the lawyers are saying, in sum, is that depending on how much jurors come to believe the dead man loved his life, his weightlifting, his job, his extended family, the price on his life could be somewhere between $4 million and $30 million. Thomas Balmes, your method just fascinates me as journalism, or as a form of journalism. I wish instead of the nightly news in America or anywhere, we had an hour of you just holding your camera up somewhere in the world. Let's walk into that law office with you where they're assessing the value of a human life, the value of pain, the positive value in a wrongful death, say, of companionship, of hand-holding, of afternoon walks with a couple, trying to put a dollar figure on all of this. How did you get in there? Just take us through your own process. How did you get in there? How did you get out of there with that exposure? What did they think? What did you learn? What do we learn? What's this experience about of dropping in on a scene?
Well, everyone is watching this with total different understanding. And I was like amazed when I just read this article about this compensation a few years ago after 9/11, just realizing that your values as a dead body was different depending on how much you were earning, which is something which is considered in France too. But then above that, that morally, what kind of life you had, what kind of pleasure you had, what kind of sexual relationship you had, the frequency of the sexual relationship you had with your wife, the quality of the sexual relationship you had with your wife could be transformed into a compensation. This leads to endless philosophical questions, which fascinate me. But many other people here in America who don't find anything specifically bizarre with this phenomenon. So you just realize that the most normal things are the most real crazy things. But this makes you reconsider every understanding of the rest of the world, which seems weird or normal to you, and how you must be looked at by other people.
They're doing justice, getting proper compensation for people's losses at one level. This is justice. It's also grotesque. How did you find your way through that gap? And where are we at the end? Where are you at the end? Take us in and then take us out of it.
I'm really not trying to bring you anywhere other than to this questioning situation, because what you really must understand that these lawyers like feel they are doing the most efficient improvement of the all American society that no politician could do, and by attacking huge corporations, laboratories, pharmaceutical laboratories, car makers, to the pocket and to the money, they are like, in some extent, improving some safety situations and regulations. But this is one aspect of it. And then you can also wonder where it will stop. You know, like someone was telling me that at one stage there was no more ladder factory in America because everyone falling down from a ladder could be suing the ladder maker, you know? And this is kind of...
Is that real?
Yeah. And this is exactly the end of the story. You know, at one stage, what is the limitation of this litigation country you are living in, you know? In like the famous story of like putting a cat in a microwave and being able to get compensation because the microwave instructions were not indicating that you shouldn't dry your cat in a microwave oven. This is endless, you know? And you...
It's also very, very funny.
And it's true.
Let's
and
admit.
It happened. I'm not inventing that, you know?
Come back to that law firm in Bridgeport where they're arguing over, you know, what's a life worth. It raises so many questions. For example, this matter of tort reform, as it's called in the United States, tort reform means cutting off people's ability to sue. And instinctively, we say, no, 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 you can't let the corporations off the hook if they do something outrageous like unsafe cars or whatever. On the other hand, you raise this question in the film of kind of endless litigation. I litigate, therefore I am. I'm putting a price on absolutely everything and fighting to the 11th generation to get it back. Where do you come out, and where should I come out? Where does the viewer of your film come out? I want to shoot all the lawyers at one level. At another level, I think maybe somebody would have to fight for my rights if I get, you know, run over by something someday.
You are totally right. This is where you should be. This is exactly where you should be. You are like, this is what I'm trying to do in every single of my film. Is like, yesterday you were like maybe thinking differently, and if you watch the film today again, you might think, well, maybe they are doing a perfect job, you know. And this is not easy. And I don't. This is to me. Raising questions, And but this is definitely not something I would judge too frankly or make fun of, like or caricature. I think a judge in France will only look at something, which is like how much money you were earning, and compensate that, and how many kids you have, and compensate that. But then questioning is like, how did you end up with all this kind of integrating into the compensation process all these things that the deceased will not leave anymore in terms of pleasure and all this lack of companionship, all these kind of things. But this is a detail. This is a country of extreme situations, you know. You have like this, and on the other hand, you have no global health system for everybody, which maybe is going to be changing now. So this is, to me, normal in a way to have that. You understand?
You know, we always speak about, you know, what would a Martian landing on Earth make of the things we do? I mean, what was the value of hand-holding of a person who just got run over by a truck or something? This is interesting. This is weird. This is crazy. This is American. This is maybe just. This is what? I don't know. What is it?
I don't know myself. You know, it's just like I have absolutely no answers to that. I would do Michael Moore's kind of film if I was sure about something where all the subject I'm treating don't have any simple answers.
Different question, Thomas. Do you look for humor? Do you look for absurdity?
Yeah, this is like something I cannot work on a process if there is no humor. But when I say humor, it means complexity. It's more surrealness maybe than humor. But I love this possibility to be both tragic and comic in everything I'm treating.
In this battle of perspectives, isn't it crucial that in that movie Damages, what looks like haggling over the price of human life, a kind of grotesque making a number out of emotions and all that sort of thing, looks to the people who did it like a kind of heroic service of justice. The law firm that seems in a way to be exposed in your movie is also very, they love the movie too.
Why wouldn't they? Well, they are doing that on daily basis for the last 20 years. They are like, this is what they are doing. You know, like there is nothing special about it for them. This is like, I'm not judging it, you know. But the way it's being done is quite incredible.
What did the lawyers say when they looked at the movie? And did they ever think of stopping you or making you make changes or edit?
None at all. We had like very, very few changes after the film was completed, and they were quite happy. As you can see, the film is very simple in its construction. We are just following different cases happening one after the other during a few months. There is absolutely no judgment. There is no commentaries on what they're doing. So they have absolutely no reason to say, well, no, this is not possible, you know. This is what they're doing. This is, to them, the simple normality of their work.
Can you imagine that people would someday see your movie of what they're doing and say, oh, my God, that's absurd. That's no way to spend a life.
Definitely. This happened to me with one of my character after I completed the film in China, A Decent Factory. This British manager who is like dealing with this ethical assessment, helping out some companies from all over the world to do ethical assessment in China, realized after watching the film and like watching the press and reading different analyze of a journalist of the film, it's even more than watching the film itself, it's reading how it could be understood by other people. She realized the craziness of the whole thing, and she changed her life by becoming starting a company doing ethical clothes with some Indian women and doing her own brand and being really much more practical by doing ethical things herself and not some kind of ethically washing big corporations, you know? So, yeah, this is kind of fascinating thing when you're influencing some of your characters, which are like looking at what they are doing in a different perspective.
Thomas Bellas, would you take us through your thinking about a project you might do this examination of all the walls going up around the world, maybe hundreds of them. I mean, it's such a fascinating idea that wall building is a great enterprise in our world at this moment. How would you conceive it? How will you organize it? How will you make pictures of it?
Well, I'm not sure yet. I'm going to have the authorization, but I don't want the film to be too theoretical, and I'm looking for people who are like engaged in the process of this building of this world worldwide. And
explain what kind of walls we're talking about.
We're talking about wall that can exist in between countries, like in between the Mexican border and America, like, or in between Israel and Palestine, or even like private cities in America. I find it fascinating.
Walled communities.
Yeah. Which is also a specificity to America. We don't have this phenomena in Europe at all. It's something you might find it totally normal, but it's very weird for us. And I think this is, you have that also in Brazil. You have that like in countries where, the equality in between people is complicated.
What tells you that that's an interesting subject about this world, this 21st century?
Well, I think immigration and borders and walls and are like, the capitalistic system, but by its exponential way of like concentrating wealth into less and less hands, can only create more and more walls. So I think this is like something which is totally parallel of our economical system worldwide. And we are now in a situation in Europe of like building walls with Africa and controlling immigration more and more, and sending back to Afghan some charters with some illegal immigrants from Afghanistan, you know. So this is, I've got a feeling that migrations and how we're going to deal with these issues, kind of important subject today.
Europe is defined these days by walls coming down. On the 20th anniversary of the Berlin Wall, famously, but the integration of what had been separate, rival, often warring states.
I think the wall which was put down is like kind of, unfortunately, totally different than the kind of wall which are being built up right now. And we are in a total kind of different relationship with these two phenomena, which are totally different. But symbolically, it's interesting, as you mentioned. But unfortunately, I think this building walls phenomenon, we are just at the beginning of it. And I think this is going to be exponential and exponential and exponential. And this is going to expand everywhere. And even nowadays, you go to China, for example, and these gated communities, even in China, are already expanding a lot. So all over the world, this is something that I think at one stage will be unlivable and will might explode, and I don't know what's going to be the solution. But for sure, I think we are only on the merge of the beginning of this process, which is going to be huge, I think.
We live now in a screen culture, as everybody says, in which the machinery for making your kind of video gets less expensive all the time. I mean, it's imaginable that millions and millions of people would go out and try to imitate you. How would you tell people who want to sort of see the world your way, see it with freshness, see it with ambiguity, see it with a certain tolerance, but also with humor and entertainment value?
Well, this is exactly what you describe. It's just like, for example, here in Watson Institute and in Brown University, I think there is potentially an amazing amount of very talented people who could really do this work if they were open to and questioned by the fact of for who are they working, and is there a possibility to break this kind of mass media world and research scholar content and trying to find a link in between these two worlds and having people here, for example, close or beside beside their research, beside their books, beside their lectures, to produce something who could popularize their studies and their understanding of certain things. And I think they should be obliged to do so. I think there is an obligation morally from people to do so. So hopefully, and I would do everything I can to convince some people here that there is something to be done, but it must come from here. It will not come from the mass media. It will come from such places where some students, instead of like producing something which will just end up as a book, which will have a very low circulation, a very small distribution, just parallelly of what they're doing, to also work with people who could help them to produce something for wider distribution, wider audience, which could now circulate through internet, through different broadcasters, through so many things.
Isn't this what's happening on YouTube already?
Yeah, but there is no real selection on YouTube, and it's difficult to find out what is good and what is not. And what you know, there is an urge to consider this as an emergency, and not to say, okay, let's leave the mass media to Fox and let's keep on concentrating on our lectures and our publishing, you know?
You were gifted from the beginning with the notion that the whole world was your audience.
Yeah, yeah. This is something I could never conceive to work for a specific audience. And to work for a specific country and to work on issues which are only being of interest for a specific country. Mm-hmm. I'm always trying to say little, but to be universal in the way I'm treating these issues.
Thomas Bummers, the work is incredibly fascinating, and I'm not quite the same since I started looking. But thank you again.
Thank you.
Paul McCarthy edited this conversation with Thomas Balmes, whose next movie, Babies, will be released for theaters all over the world next April. Thanks also to our Brown University interns, Ben Mandelkern and Hannah Olson. Special thanks to Keith Brown, the anthropologist who hosted Thomas Balmes at Brown University. Share your own direct cinema experiences, the documentaries you've watched or made or dreamed of making, at our website, radioopensource.org. I'm Christopher Lydon. Thank you for joining the conversation.